It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in New York. In addition to being head of research at Firebird Management, Steve Gorelick is the fund manager of Firebird US Value Fund, as well as portfolio manager of Firebird's Eastern Europe and Russia funds. He joined Firebird in 2005 from Columbia Business School while completing education from a highly selective value investing program. Prior to business school, Steve was an operational strategy consultant at Deloitte, working with companies in various industries, including banking, healthcare, and retail. I draw your attention to Steve's past presentations at our online conferences, as well as his wonderful article, Why We Invest in Eastern Europe. And I would just add that I do consider Steve to be one of our foremost experts on investing in Eastern Europe here at MOI Global. And I do hope that our members will feel free to reach out to him with any thoughts or questions on investing in Eastern Europe. So on behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome back to you, Steve. Please go ahead.
John, thank you very much for that kind introduction and for invitation to participate in this year's MOI's Best Ideas Forum. Over the years of participating in the community, I've met a number of wonderful people, and I'm looking forward to more connections in the next year. Very briefly about my firm. Firebird Management, earlier this year, we have celebrated 25th anniversary, and we're best known, as John has mentioned, for investing in Eastern European markets. 7 years ago, as part of looking at the different ways that we can diversify our firm, we decided to launch a new strategy, applying our fundamental cash flow focused investment approach to investing in US equities. And today's presentation about some of the lessons learned from this experience and specific opportunity we see today in the shares of cars.com. The basic point behind Ben Graham's famous quote about market being voting and waiting machine is that in the short term, market pays attention to recent news and trends, but over the long term, fundamentals of the company shine through. Capturing the point in which the market turns its opinion on a company is one of the most difficult, exciting, and at the same time lucrative exercises investors engage in. And today, I will spend some time on past situations where we have successfully identified these inflection points and some of the lessons learned from that. The reason why inflection points lead to outsized returns is not just operational improvement, which is often insignificant, but the multiple expansion that accompanies the change in the market opinion of the company. Companies that are not performing well generally trade at lower multiple than their peers because their prospects are considered to be bleaker than the best players in the industry. Good companies trade at higher valuations because they grow their intrinsic value at the expense of weaker companies. What we found is that good and bad is not a permanent state. Hubris, poor decision-making, or something else can hurt the dominant player. Alternatively, management of the weaker companies has the incentive to work hard to dance competition to regain its position and improve results. As laggards figure out ways to catch up to better competitors, market opinion on them changes and multiple differential can disappear, leading to outsized returns. While inflection points are often more obvious in hindsight, we did find that there are a few key requirements that create an inflection point. First of all, the company needs to have a significant part of its costs fixed. If you're a wholesaler operating at 10% gross margin, or even less, the incremental dollar of revenue contributes just a few cents of profit and does not move the needle from the point of view of overall profitability of the company. Alternatively, for businesses such as airlines, hotels, movie theaters, with significant fixed cost base, almost all of the revenue from each additional customer can fall directly to the bottom line and has outsized impact on profitability. One of the most important exercises we perform when looking at a new company is tracking historical revenues and costs, both as percent of sales and on operating metrics, to see if they're driven by revenue or by some other measures. Second, it is important to figure out which operating metrics drive results. In some cases, like airlines and passenger numbers, it's pretty easy. In other cases, it could be slightly more complicated. For example, I think that for service or sales companies, an important metric is number of salespeople and their productivity. Salespeople are usually incentivized based on their revenue and based on the revenues that they generate. If highly productive salespeople are joining a particular company, it means that they see lucrative opportunities for themselves in marketing these companies' products. And that's a great sign. And last but not least, in terms of identifying the inflection points, it's important to understand the current market sentiment. Sell-side reports and differential and trading multiples can give a good indication of what market currently thinks about the company and what are the key areas of concern. Finding inflection points in some ways is a lot more art than science. There are certain things that we found works. There are certain things that we find that don't work. But overall, as I already said, it's an interesting and very lucrative exercise. I thought it would be useful to illustrate past examples of inflection points we have identified and their impact on companies' performance. First is the situation we witnessed with Chipotle following food quality scandals in 2016. Same-store sales fell by 20%, and company went from being the market darling to a pariah. We got interested in the situation and quickly realized that most of the costs for Chipotle were fixed, with food expenses being anywhere between 33 and 35% of sales, being the only truly variable cost. When the same-store sales dropped by 25%, it was not surprising that Chipotle's operating margin fell from 17% to zero. But it was also clear that if sales recover, profitability would recover rapidly as well. We also saw that most people commenting on the stocks were expecting the same-store sales growth would come back in a year or two, assuming no new food safety scandals. But they were more careful about projecting the recovery in margins. In 2018, new CEO of the company, Brian Nichols, joined and specifically chose operating contribution margin as a key metric for his compensation scheme, knowing that with sales coming back, it would be relatively easy to accomplish what seemed like stretch goals. Fast forward almost 2 years, and we see the situation played out almost perfectly for the company. Same-store sales growth, in part driven by delivery, have come back. Sales per location are once again above $2 million, the level before safety issues in 2016, and operating margins are approaching pre-2016 levels. The shares have now almost tripled since Mr. Nichols became CEO of the company in 2018. Another example from the past is WWE, Worldwide Entertainment, World Wrestling Entertainment, during the launch of its online subscription service, WWE Network. Since Network was targeted towards its biggest fans and came with all of the premium content like WrestleMania, it was directly cannibalizing the lucrative profit stream that company was getting from pay-per-view. It was making approximately $45 million or so per year on pay-per-view viewership. On top, the network had a fixed cost of roughly $100 million, which meant that by making a decision to develop the network, WWE was starting in a $150 million hole compared to where they were before the launch of the service. That said, the beautiful thing about WWE business model, especially compared to Netflix or Apple with its newest offering, is that launch of the network did not mean significant spending on content. They had that already, and all the subscription revenues were falling directly to the bottom line. While market was dubious at first, the company re-rated in 2015 when it became clear that network will likely reach at least 1.3 million subscribers that was necessary to make up the $150 million or so spent on creation of the network, if you include the loss of pay-per-view revenues. At the time, the company shares have re-rated from $10 to $20. However, when subscribers numbers picked up in 2018, partially driven by international expansion, markets saw the benefit that these additional subscribers would bring and bid up the company to almost $100 per share. In both examples outlined above, we saw small revenue gains drive significant changes in operating profitability and even greater change in market value of the company. High operating leverage in business combined with change in sentiment leads to truly outsized returns. One thing I did not mention yet is that it's much easier for inflection points to occur in an industry where underlying demand for product is growing rather than declining, and it should be considered in broader context as well. For example, with retailers, While they're considered to be in terminal decline right now due to online competition, it's important to keep in mind that overall consumer spending and retail spending, if you include online sales, is growing. And traditional retailers are focusing on figuring out ways how to better compete with online alternatives. Now that we had a chance to speak about our analytical framework when it comes to looking for companies with inflection points, I would like to spend some time on a company that I believe has one of the more interesting risk-reward propositions in today's market. The company is Cars.com. It's a digital automotive marketplace that connects car shoppers with dealers and car manufacturers. The key purpose of the website is to empower shoppers with resources to make an informed buying decision. The company was spun out of Tegna in May 2017 and has been operating as a standalone company ever since. Cars.com benefits from top-of-the-mind name recognition that comes with the name Cars.com. Name recognition increases relevance with car shopping public and in turn makes it more valuable to dealers looking to capture attention of the customers. They also invested heavily in new technology and at the moment have a number one car shopping mobile application. Cars.com differentiates itself from competition by offering additional value-added services, some of which are free and some of which are valuable upsells. Free features include auto-corrected, where Cars.com makes suggestions to the dealers of how to improve their listings to maximize revenues. Number one position in mobile apps allows Cars.com to offer something called Lot Insights, where dealers get information on where specifically the shoppers are standing in the lot and what they're looking up at the app at the same time, offering ability to the dealers to preempt competitive offers. One of the newest and most exciting offers from Cars.com comes from acquisition of Dealer Inspire, a digital marketing solutions provider for dealerships. They're recognized as one of the best provider of website solutions for dealers and have been getting significant traction since Cars.com acquired the company in the beginning of 2018. Earlier, we have identified three key prerequisites for finding interesting inflection points, but it all starts from understanding what are the key operating statistics. The obvious metric in this case is to track the number of dealer customers and the revenue per dealer the company generates. The decline in overall number of dealers' customers over the last couple of years is the reason why today's opportunity to buy a high-quality company at an attractive price exists. The less obvious, but just as important statistic to track is traffic to the Cars.com website. Cars.com is on track to receive more than 500 million visits to its website in 2019, up 20% from last year. Traffic matters since dealers want for their inventory and name to be in front of potential car shoppers, even if it does not lead to immediate buying decisions. We heard that 80% of the cars are sold to customers who simply show up at the dealers following doing their research online. By not being present on Cars.com site and missing out on their 500 million visitors, dealers are risking missing out on potential customers who are choosing Cars.com as their research tool in this important spending decision. Cars.com operates in the United States, but the addressable market is quite significant. There are 43,000 new and used car dealers in the US, and they spend on average over $500,000 per year on marketing, most of which shifted to the internet over the last few years. Internet advertising has been taking share from other mediums because of its effectiveness and ease of tracking ROI. The old saying of 50% of ad spending not working, but the problem of not knowing which half, does not apply to internet advertising, and that increases effectiveness of marketing spend for dealerships. As an aside, it's interesting to note that ad spending as percent of GDP fell in this decade to below 1% compared to historical norms of 1.2 to 1.4% of GDP. And I believe a lot of it has to do with the effectiveness of internet advertising. Cars.com currently has around 19,000 customers that spend on average $33,000 per annum with them. That means that more than half of the dealers in the US are yet to become their customers, and that they're capturing slightly more than 10% of customers' internet advertising. Dealership internet advertising should continue to grow at the expense of other mediums, and for Cars.com, there's significant opportunity in both bringing in additional customers and increasing their share of the spend. So with all of this opportunity ahead of them, why have Cars.com revenues and profits declined in 2019? Well, there's a few reasons. First, there's competition from CarGurus specifically, which was started by one of the TripAdvisor founders. It emerged as a significant competitor to existing players and quickly gained share with their digital-first approach and cut-price offerings. The second is Cars.com heritage that came from being part of a newspaper company. Roughly a third of their customers were coming from affiliate relationships where Cars.com product was being sold by newspaper advertising salespeople at large publishing companies such as Gannett, Tegna, and Trunk. Needless to say that selling Cars.com subscription was not their primary concern. And also to some extent, given the high ROI of digital spending, was cannibalizing their own revenue sources from newspaper advertising. We've heard from a number of dealers that their salespeople were non-existent and hard to get a hold of, which put them at disadvantage from competitors like CarGurus and AutoTrader, which were much more accessible and responsive. Affiliates also had exclusivity over certain geographies, including large markets like South Florida, Miami, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Chicago, Cars.com home base, which meant that Cars.com could not go and sell their product in those markets, even if they thought that they could do better than newspapers. The above factors led to declining number of dealers this year, but they believe that the worst is behind Cars.com, and they're facing a much more level competitive market next year. On CarGurus side, the company went public in late 2017, showing 100% growth in revenues in 2016. Since their market penetration was already high, it would be almost impossible for them to keep up high growth rates expected by the market without increasing prices. Their revenue per dealer has been growing by 30% per annum, largely eliminating the price advantage that dealers used to enjoy by directing spending on CarGurus. Anecdotally, we heard that cost per vehicle display page, a key metric for dealers, went up from 15 cents to 25 cents on CarGurus, while Cars.com costs them roughly 30 cents per vehicle display page. The price advantage for CarGurus is still there, but it's no longer significant. On affiliate relationship side, Cars.com recognized the problem and initiated a strategy to convert affiliate relationships into direct ones. Starting in January 2018 with the conversion of Trunk, Cars.com began breaking long-term affiliate contracts. The Trunk conversion was followed by the conversion of McClatchy and the Washington Post before the expiration of affiliate agreements. The process ended in Q3 of 2019 when the remaining 3,000 or so dealers handled by Tegna, Gannett, and Bello were converted to direct relationships. The conversion of relationships from affiliate to direct results in an increase in revenues due to recognition of 100% of revenues instead of 60%, but also higher costs through increase in sales force. Most importantly, the process of conversion temporarily distorts operating cash flow metrics due to contract breakage payments. In 2018, Cars.com paid $25 million of cash for early termination payments. In 2019, these payments are $40 million, which is a third of their expected operating cash flow. And the payments will come down significantly to $12 million in 2020 and will be eliminated completely after that. The other side of improving competitive positioning is Cars.com's two-year effort to improve its search relevance and customer traffic, which began to bear fruit this year. Cars.com invested in search engine optimization and growing organic traffic, which led to both higher number of visitors to their site and significantly lower traffic acquisition costs. Between Q1 2018 and the latest quarter, marketing cost per visitor has dropped by around 40%. Number of visitors increased by 20% this year, and market share has grown while CarGurus' share of the market fell. Higher traffic over time should lead to higher relevance to dealers and to OEMs, which are trying to reach car shoppers with advertising on Cars.com site. National advertising revenue fell this year as car manufacturers cut their advertising budget in the face of declining new car sales. Cars.com national advertising revenue per visitor to site fell in half between 2016 and now, and I believe it should recover if Cars.com relevance in the marketplace will continue to grow. So where are we today in terms of inflection point in the key operating statistic number of car dealerships? Overall number of dealers have been falling every quarter since the beginning of 2017 and has accelerated this year as affiliates stop marketing Cars.com product, anticipating elimination of the relationships. On the Q2 call, company announced that for the first time in a long time, they're seeing net adds, excluding losses from affiliates, starting to flatten out. And on Q3 call, the CEO mentioned that in October, after completion of all affiliate conversions, Cars.com added 100 net new dealers. They were also very careful to manage expectations of growth in dealers in Q4 by saying that end of the year usually comes with cost-cutting decisions for next year's budgets. But one thing is clear, it seems that we're much closer to a point where number of car dealerships on Cars.com platform will stop declining and start growing, creating an important inflection point. In describing conditions for the inflection point, we spent time talking about fixed cost base and high operating leverage that comes with it. In the case of Cars.com, most of the costs are not linked to revenues, with cost of goods sold representing roughly 20% or so of revenues. Largest expense item is marketing, and it has more to do with traffic to their site. It seems that from point of view of operating leverage, revenues that would come from increases in both number of dealer customers and national advertising would flow through almost directly to the bottom line. So what does market think of Cars.com? The short answer is not much. Due to a number of reasons, which include declining dealer numbers, concerns about competition, distrust of management, and failed sales process, Cars.com is trading at more than 50% discount to both domestic and international peers. Year to date, the shares of the companies are down almost 50%, and the analyst community is neutral to negative on companies' prospects. Before we go on to catalysts for change, it makes sense to spend a bit more time on the reasons why Cars.com is cheap. We have already covered the declining dealer numbers, but there's plenty of other reasons to be concerned about the company. There's history of not meeting financial targets. Since becoming a listed company in 2017, Cars.com on four different occasions had to lower market expectations and not once increase their guidance. Management has little credibility with investing public. There's also the failed sales process. Last year, respected activist investor Starboard took nearly 9% stake in the company, agitating for change. The board initiated a strategic review process, which included seeking bidders for the company. The sales process went through for most of 2019, culminating in the August 5th announcement that after initial interest from 29 different prospective bidders, Cars.com failed to reach an agreement with three strategic parties that entered the final stage of negotiation. On the day of the announcement of the failed sales process, Cars.com's share fell by more than 40%. And soon after that, the Starboard Valley filed notice that their ownership in the company fell below 5% reporting threshold. They proceeded to eliminate their holding completely as of the end of Q3. While the company provided some information on sales process in its August 5th filing, it's hard to know for sure what process failed. The press release implies the strategic bidders participating in the final round have run into their own problems, which prevented them from bidding on the company. One thing is certain, the failure of sales process and subsequent drop in share price has put additional pressure on current management and board of directors to meet financial targets or face challenges from future activists. So where do we stand with regard to inflection point checklist? I believe we have a fundamentally growing business with marketing spend by dealerships shifting to digital advertising due to higher return on investment. We have a high fixed cost base and high operating leverage in a situation where most of the additional revenues would fall to the bottom line. And we definitely have negative sentiment in a company that is trading at significant discount to peers while its competitive position is seemingly improving. In his interview with CBS's Value Investing with Legends podcast, David Abrams pointed out that with any investment, you have to have either catalyst or growth, preferably both, to avoid getting yourself into value trap. I think in the case of Cars.com, there's a couple of hard catalysts that should result in positive evaluation of company sooner rather than later. First is the dealer conversions and the specific impact that they're having on cash flows from operation. As I mentioned before, dealer conversions are costing company $40 million this year through prepayments to affiliate partners for breaking the contracts. These payments will largely go away next year, significantly improving operating cash flow position of Cars.com, even if the dealer numbers do not grow. Then there's the increasing revenues from Dealer Inspire. Dealer Inspire, which was acquired in early 2018, is already proving to be a successful acquisition, with annualized revenues growing from $55 million at the time of acquisition to $80 million as of the latest quarter. In September, GM announced that they will open up their 4,000 plus dealers to buying website services from four different providers instead of one, one of those providers being Dealer Inspire. Cars.com believes that they will get their fair share of this business, which would mean additional $25 million of revenue for the company. Despite losing dealer customers, national advertising revenue, and other problems last couple of years, Cars.com continues to generate significant operating cash flow and using it pretty smartly. Adjusting for affiliate payments this year, Cars.com will generate roughly $135 million of operating cash flow, of which only $18 million needs to be spent on CapEx. That implies 14% normalized free cash flow yield on these years' depressed earnings. As a reminder, S&P 500 is currently trading at roughly 3.8% free cash flow yield. Cars.com has been reasonably good at allocating free cash flow as well. Their large acquisition was Dealer Inspire, which we think will prove to be highly successful. They've also been paying down debt, which came from the spinoff, and they also bought back 7% of their shares, which we also think over time will prove good capital allocation as well. Instead of using price targets, all of the holdings in our fund are considered based on long-term IRR that include dividends and buybacks. We try to make reasonable assumptions on exit multiples and on operating metrics to come up with what an investor would earn by holding on to company shares over the next 2 or 3 years. In the case of Cars.com, we assume 11 times a EBITDA on exit, which is half of market peers trading average, but is slightly higher than where the company is trading today. And based on those numbers that we're seeing today, we think that the investment in Cars.com can earn an IRR of over 30% over the next 2 to 3 years. And if the company ever trades up to the level where the comps are trading, then the upside could be 200% or higher. So in summary, we think that investing in operational inflection points can bring outsized returns to shareholders. And we think that Cars.com is currently at a very interesting inflection point that could result in similarly high returns. Thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward to your questions.
Steve, thank you very much for this very interesting presentation. Could you address kind of, I guess, somewhat the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is competition from the likes of Google in the long term? Similar concerns have been raised for other companies like Booking.com and others, where over the long term they could see competition there. What's your take on that?
It's a great question, and I think there's a little bit of a difference in the way that people are shopping for hotels, which is relevant to Google.com, versus the way that people are shopping for cars. Because there's so much difference in choice, and you don't have that accumulation that comes with the reviews over time, looking at 5 different cars side by side, if you're looking at them on Google, you're not really getting any additional information like you should be getting in terms of what other people think about it. So that's why the way that people shop, I think it would be highly unlikely that the price comparison and function comparison will move from specialized websites like Cars.com and Car Gurus, Auto Trader, etc., to Google, where you can credibly make the case for that with hotel shopping. So over time, I think this is a slightly different purchase decision. It's a big purchase decision. And because you don't have that historical information from other buyers, because each car is different, because you don't have the historical information, the relevance of the information that Google will provide and Google's network is not as high.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Can you elaborate a little bit on how you see management allocating free cash flow going forward?
So at the moment, it seems like most of the free cash flow that they're going to be generating will most likely be going to pay down debt. And I think that is the right way to think about it, right thing to do over the next 2 years for the company in order to bring the leverage down to a level that it's not going to be a concern.
You are showing here on this slide also the inflection point in normalized free cash flow going up from 2019 to 2020. What do you expect that trajectory to be going forward? And is it realistic to believe that they could return to some of the free cash flow they've seen in past years?
So the difference between 2020 and 2015, we're talking about a difference of a couple of thousand dealer customers and roughly, I think, $30 to $40 million of national advertising. In both cases, I think it's if the company continues, and there's a lot of ifs, this is not a sure thing, but if the company continues along the gaining traction in terms of traffic, I think it's highly likely that they can get back to, they can increase their dealer numbers by 10% over the next 2 or 3 years. They can increase their national advertising by 30 to 40% over the next 2 or 3 years. And then because of the fixed cost base, you can definitely see this company coming back to free cash flow of around $200 million or higher. But I'm not assuming that at all in my calculations. I don't think it needs to come back to that. I think what we need to see is we need to see a sentiment change, because a company that is trading at 16% free cash flow yield, at 14% free cash flow yield, it's assumed that these free cash flows will be going down, not going to be going up. So if they can prove that their business is stable, I think we'll see a multiple change already. And if they can show that the business is growing, then it's going to be an absolute home run.
How does a player like Tesla change the industry landscape in your mind? And could that have any bearing on a company like cars.com?
So Tesla in its own is a insignificant part of the market. It gets a lot of attention, but from a point of view of the number of cars sold relative to the total number of cars sold, it's insignificant. I think the bigger question here is that the electric cars in general, and if electric cars will lead to a significantly longer ownership. So right now with the average age of the car in the road, 12 years, but if the electric cars is more reliable and can last for 20 years instead of 12, then we'll see less cars being bought and sold every year. We can also see if we have self-driving, we can see less cars being damaged every year. So as a result of safer driving conditions. So that could have some impact on a number of cars being sold every year, and specifically used cars being sold, which is a vast majority of the market. But that said, I think it's not a immediate transition. I don't think we'll see these changes in 1 year or 2 years. And the way that things are going to look 10 years down the road, I think it's anybody's guess.
And maybe lastly, just to push back a little bit on the idea of retiring debt when we live in a low interest rate environment and you have your own stock yielding 14 or 16%, why doesn't it make sense to tilt that more toward share repurchases?
I think you generally have a problem when a company is considered to be over-levered by the market. I've seen that time and time again when a company has leverage of 4 times, 5 times and is thought of as a declining company. Well, that leverage from a point of view of just taking away value from shareholders at that particular time cost the company a lot more. These companies are considered to be less stable. The companies are considered to be less capable of weathering shocks. So a level of debt that is closer to 2x EBITDA makes a lot more sense. So, and I think that's from that point of view, for long-term stability of cars.com, it does make sense to bring down debt to a level that is more acceptable. But after that, if it continues to trade at these levels, absolutely would be the right thing to do is to buy back more shares.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that explanation. I will leave it there. At this point, I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you directly with their own thoughts or questions. Thank you for showing your contact information here on the screen. Of course, we are always happy to facilitate an introduction as well. Steve, it's always a pleasure to learn from you and benefit from your research and ideas. Thank you so much for taking the time again to be with us and share your investment thesis. We truly appreciate it.
John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Goodbye for now.